Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
City officials say Chicago has no more shelter space to house migrants who've arrived from the southern border. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Over the weekend, the mayor sent a letter to Texas Governor Greg Abbott asking him to stop sending people to Chicago. Here's Mayor Lightfoot.
We are completely tapped out. We have no more space, no more resources. And frankly, we're already in a surge. We've been seeing over the last week, 200 plus people coming to Chicago every single day.
People have been forced to sleep on the floor at O'Hare and at Chicago police stations. And the city's facing a $53 million budget shortfall to deal with this crisis. So to get more insight into the situation and what migrants need, we turn to Laura Mendoza, immigration officer with the Resurrection Project based in Pilsen, and Mario Garcia, executive director of Onward Neighborhood House in Belmont Cragin. Laura, more than 8,000 migrants have arrived in Chicago in recent months. Many of them bust from Texas after they arrived at the U.S.-Mexico border. What's the latest?
Yeah, I mean, we have continued to see migrants arriving at Chicago.
Has it been steady the whole time?
It has, yeah. I mean, obviously when they're being brought on buses, it takes a lot more resources because you're getting about anywhere from 50 to 150 people at one time. But in a weird way, it makes it a little bit easier because everybody's on a bus. You kind of know what's happening, what's going on. What's been happening in the last couple of months, it's really just people making their way up here, whether it is that they have purchased a ticket themselves or a family member or maybe even an organization down in Texas that is trying to help them. So we are seeing people kind of just showing up at different organizations, Resurrection Project being one of them, where people are just showing up and asking for help. And so that makes it a lot more difficult for us to actually get numbers, for us to actually know how many people are coming in.
What is that like? On any given day, you're at work and people are just showing up in what, the tens, the 20s?
It kind of depends. I mean, we've had it's mainly been like families. So like one family will show up, and so then you have four
people.
But you
never know when.
You never know when. So we have to make sure that all of our staff is trained and kind of knows what to do if a family does come and knows that, you know, we're going to be able to do very limited amount of things, right? Sometimes our staff is like, I wish I could do more. I wish I could take them home with me and help them, right? And we are limited to being able to call 311 and kind of setting them on that wait list to be able to get shelter.
And how are they taking that news? That's devastating.
It is. They were not expecting that, right? There's also a lot of misinformation. They have this idea that they're going to come here and all of a sudden they're going to have housing and all of their needs are going to be met. And so we have to have those really tough conversations about, like, there are limited resources and this is a protocol and this is kind of what you should expect, where you're going to maybe be waiting a day up to 4 days for you to actually be able to go into shelter.
Wow.
If you are a couple, you are going to be separated, right? You can't be in the same shelter. So having those really tough conversations with them after a very traumatic experience that they've had in journey is very difficult.
So, Mario, I mentioned a moment ago, folks are sleeping on the floor at police stations. How long are people there? And what are you hearing from them about what that's like?
Oh, it's a horrible situation, and they have been there for a couple of days, 3 days, a week, to many, many days. It's a very difficult situation. I think just to add to what Laura was saying, we have to keep in mind that for many of them, it's been a hellish trip for a year or more getting to this country, and then when they finally make it and they're at a hotel or they're with a community-based organization, they're hoping that there is a solution, there is a good answer, and it's not. It's more about waiting. It's more indignities in many cases, even if we're all trying to do the best that we can, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the letter that Mayor Lightfoot sent to the Texas governor, she said, quote, "The national immigration problem will not be solved by passing on the responsibility to other cities." In your view, Mario, who is ultimately responsible for responding to this problem?
I think we all are. And I think that's one of the great roles that community-based organizations are stepping in. in helping, just like it happened with the pandemic. I think we're finding out that community-based organizations are the safety nets in our communities.
Absolutely.
For anybody. And once again, with immigration issues that we're having, we're there. So I think it's all of us, it's community-based organizations, it's the city and the state, which I think have done a very good job of putting in resources, even though we need more. And the federal government needs to do its part. But I also think that each individual in all our communities can contribute to a solution, just a solution that's going to be long-term. I think community members are stepping in to help short-term by donating food, donating clothes, and helping translate and all those kinds of things. But I think we also need to hear the voices of our communities so that there can be a political solution long-term. Because if this is something, you know, Laura mentioned that this immigration, most recent wave, has been happening since 2018, 2017. We started to see migrants coming from Venezuela, from Ecuador into the northwest side of Chicago.
We've been here before. Yeah, at a city council committee meeting on Friday, 33rd Ward Alderwoman Rosanna Rodriguez asked if there could be foldable cots for people at the stations to sleep on and, you know, access to showers. The response was that there wasn't room to store the cots. So, Laura, what would you like to see from the city?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it always comes down to resources. So, you know, not surprised that that's what they're saying. I think first, I do want to say that, you know, the process that is set in place makes sense, right? So a family member gets here, you call 311 to be able to place them into shelter. It's what ends up happening afterwards that is so disjointed, right? The waiting in police stations for 4 days doesn't make sense. And part of that is because right now there isn't really a clear process for migrants that have been here, that have been in the shelter system since, let's say, 6 months ago when we first started to see buses. There really isn't a clear path for them to be able to move into housing. So they're not being provided with counseling, with assistance to be able to move from the shelter to be able to move into their own housing. So I think like that needs to happen in order to also help free up some of the space that is already there to make way for new people so that they're not waiting in those shelters for 4 days.
But I mean, some of the shelters are at capacity. That's
right.
That's the other side of the coin here, right? Family and Support Services Commissioner Brandy Nazis said that to meet the needs of housing, these newly arriving migrants, the city's going to have to consider taking buildings offline, converting them to serve this purpose. But we know creating temporary shelters from vacant buildings, that's not easy to do, right? Because we've got a lot of buildings that aren't actually made for people to live in.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think we're talking more of kind of this midterm maybe solution, right? Which like the state has actually been able to do, which is like move people from hotels into housing. They're helping them pay for a couple months of rent while people figure out, you know, their situation, figure out how to be able to afford that rent. So we're talking about that piece is missing in Chicago. You know, again, the state has been able to move about 1,000 families into housing. They are paying for rent. That is something the city of Chicago is not doing, and I think it needs to be explored to be able to see the ability to make room in those shelters that are already established.
So, Mario, then, in thinking about what buildings are available in Belmont Cragin, where Onward Neighborhood House is located, what comes to your mind?
I think the only possibility in the northwest side would be to identify quite a number of the vacant lots spaces and commercial.
Yeah, you got some empty factories there, right?
Empty factories, those kinds of things that are not conducive for living, but it will require an investment from the state and the city to make them livable for families. Especially, I think the key thing here is that we're also getting quite a number of families with small children. So that's
how does that complicate things for you?
Well, I think for us, it's in terms of the heartbreak of families not having a place to live. Because one of the things that we can do is we can provide services. Like we can enroll them in our preschool. Right now, about a quarter of our kids in our preschool are recent arrivals, maybe since December.
Wow. Well, we know the Texas governor is expected to start sending more buses full of migrants to Chicago as early as today, Laura. So is there a plan in place to meet folks and to provide the limited services, as you outlined a few moments ago?
The city is having a call with community-based organizations later today at about 2 p.m. To kind of go over what the plan is. As Mario mentioned, community-based organizations are willing and ready to be there. But we definitely also need the resources. At the end of the day, our staff needs to get paid, and we need to make sure that we have enough people there to be able to provide adequate services. So we are hopeful. We're willing to work with the city. We want to work with the city, but resources do need to be made available.
We're also expected to see more folks arriving in a few weeks once a controversial federal COVID-era emergency ban is set to lift. So just can you explain Title 42 for those who aren't aware, Laura?
So really briefly, Title 42 is not an immigration law. It is a health care initiative, and it was meant to prevent people coming in during the pandemic so as to avoid more people being infected by COVID. That's how it was sold. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be to prevent COVID, to prevent the pandemic.
To limit the number of people coming in.
Correct. Limit the number of people. People were not able to come in. And so they were being essentially stuck in Mexico, which is like the Mexico-U.S. border. The pandemic, right, the federal government is basically going to state May 11th that the pandemic is over, right? COVID is no longer a thing. Therefore, Title 42 no longer really makes sense because mm-hmm. you're saying that this law is to prevent the spread of COVID. And now May 11th, the federal government is saying that COVID is the pandemic is not happening anymore. So that's going to allow people then to be able to come and seek asylum in the U.S. as, they're supposed to. And so that means that people that have been at the border for now the past 3 years, because some people have waited that long to be able to come in, are going to be able to present at the border and claim asylum.
So, Mario, are we in a place to be able to meet this influx of people?
No, I think in terms of resources, but I think in terms of the spirit of folks, my experience over the last, since the 8 months, since August 31st, is that community-based organizations have stepped in. And the community at large, mm-hmm. whether it's donating food or money, have helped. But it's still going to be, there's not enough resources, let's put it that way.
So final thoughts on what you want to see from the city and our next mayor. I'll let you go first, Mario.
I would say that resources and bring community-based organizations more for planning purposes, because we're down there in the trenches, so that we have a better plan, more effective plan in order to meet the demand.
Yeah. And Laura?
Yeah, I'll echo that. I think, a lot more resources. We do have a new mayor, Mayor-elect Johnson, coming in. So his continued commitment and support to be able to do this, to think through some innovative ways maybe of how do we address this. And then also I think we need to push the federal government, right? Because at the end of the day, we can have as many resources as possible in the city of Chicago, but policy at the federal level needs to be addressed to mm-hmm. be able to make sure that people have a legal path to be able to stay in the city, to be able to work, and to be able to become legal permanent residents and U.S. citizens.
Mm. We'll leave it there for now. Laura Mendoza is from the Resurrection Project and Mario Garcia from Onward Neighborhood House. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of Reset was produced by Linnea Dominic and edited by Ethan Schwab and Dan Tucker. Take Reset with you on the go and stay up to date on all the big stories happening near you with the Reset podcast and, out today, the Reset newsletter. Sign up at WBEZ.org. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Let's talk again tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.